I had a very strange childhood.
Had the worst case any doctor had ever seen.
My job is to keep healing.
So that is the story.
We all have remarkable stories within us. Stories of adversity, challenges, triumphs, and ultimately of healing. This is Your Health, Your Story, the podcast.
I'm always quite baffled at our unhealthy relationship with the sun and natural rhythms that revolve around it. It's gotten so bad that there was a recent article in the New York Post entitled Gen Zers Face Blindness Epidemic Due to Lack of Sunlight from Staring at Phones. It goes on to describe how time spent in the sun boosts dopamine levels while staying indoors reduces those levels, which leads to serious eye problems. Today, we're bringing on a guest to help us appreciate that big ball of gas in the sky and live in harmony with it. He's a men's health coach, athlete, writer, and co-founder of the 2AM podcast. This is the story of Sunlight as Therapy with Zayd Dehaj. Zayd, so nice to have you on.
Thank you for having me on, brother. I'm very excited for it.
You know, I was super excited when a few of my followers on Instagram told me, hey, you should reach out to this guy, Zayd. He has a love for the sun like you do. I feel like nowadays there aren't too many people out there that are really promoting this idea of being out in the sun, really taking the time to build that relationship with the sun when it's demonized so often and it's basically told that, you know, the main form of skin cancer is due to sun exposure and UV exposure. But before we go into really discussing, you know, the benefits of sunlight and your thoughts on it, I wanted to get your story because you really came into the health world because of your own kind of tragic loss and trauma in life. So can you go into that a little bit and tell us about how you got started into the health world?
Yeah, sure thing. So I come from a more unconventional background, let's say, compared to a lot of people in the health space, especially when you consider like going to educational or conventional education and all that stuff. I was always an athlete at heart. I played competitive soccer since I was 4. I pursued that for about like 20, 22 years. So a long time, which led me into this natural interest within the health realm, of course, because if you have to perform on the field, you have to have a healthy body and you have to make sure that everything's going well. So, you know, that planted a little seed in my mind. And then when I was 18 in England pursuing professional soccer, because that was my goal, I wanted to play professionally, my father experienced his second heart attack within the span of a year. And that led him into a coma, which eventually led to his passing, myocardial infarction, which is extremely common. And that's what really kicked me in the ass, so to speak, to really become obsessed with this realm, because I wanted to figure out like what was the actual cause of heart disease specifically. And then that led me off into a whole bunch of different subjects, more specifically within the past year and a half or so, circadian biology, circadian rhythms, sunlight, artificial light, evolutionary biology. So, you know, I've been bitten by the bug, so to speak, and I am truly obsessed. Like every waking hour that I have is an opportunity for me to study this game. And, you know, that's allowed me to help other gentlemen, other people, and really become an educator in the field.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you've turned a lot of this towards men's health, right? And I do feel like that is an area, listen, I'm in the integrative medicine field, also health and wellness, and I find a lot of people in general with a proclivity or more of the passion towards it are women or females. And a lot of men kind of shun these ideas of going beyond maybe the gym, you know, to as their health or eating a lot of steak and things like that and the carnivore diet, but really do not address what health is as a whole, which is also your emotions, your psychological state, spiritual purpose, all of these things. So why did you mainly focus on the men's health aspect to it?
I would say just because, you know, I'm a man myself, so I understand how men think. I've seen the level of dysfunction within the male demographic in society. And it's really striking to me because I feel like a lot of guys have this like brute force caveman approach to overall health. Like you said, eating a lot of steak, going to the gym. These are like basic foundations, but they're, you know, it doesn't go deep enough for my liking. So I've really just gravitated towards that demographic specifically. But the good thing is that a lot of these timeless principles around biology apply to women as well. So it just, if you're a human being, this stuff applies to you. But yeah, I think generally I understand how men think more often than not, and it just puts me in a position to allow myself to help them in an even better way.
What are the biggest challenges you're finding when you deal with men? Is it the resistance to kind of change to open-mindedness? What do you feel is the kind of biggest setback for men to really embracing a healthy lifestyle?
I think there's an element of pride involved with a lot of men. They're not willing to seek for help. They're not willing to admit that they're not taking the right approach to certain things within their health. But then I think it applies broadly to the human species. I mean, we don't have the, at least in my opinion, I don't see a lot of people having the level of curiosity that's needed in order to solve a lot of things around the health discussion. And so I don't even think it's like a male centric I don't even think it applies to gender. I just think it's a human problem. Just the idea that we already understand certain things and we're not willing to go into different realms to figure out the truth.
And it's really interesting as well, because I find a lot of people just don't want to do the research. And like you said, don't have the curiosity anymore, especially when it comes to something like health. They want to outsource that completely. And if there's one thing you probably shouldn't really outsource, it's your health. It's the thing that, you know, keeps you alive and humming and productive and feeling well. Where do you think that came from? Where did that shift? Is that part of the loss of kind of biorhythms, purpose, and our connection with nature that led us to sort of this, well, whatever, I'll just take a pill for it, stay indoors all the time, watch Netflix and just doom scroll forever on Instagram? Like, is that what you feel is at the core of these sort of this tectonic shift into everyone sort of outsourcing their health now?
I think it is. Yeah. I think when you consider the advent of technology, when you consider the authority figures in the space that, you know, want to hand out recommendations to make it easier for people to not think about these things, when you think about just human nature in general, we are a pretty productive species, but there's an aspect to us that's very lazy as well. So I think all of these things coalesce into one framework and really one societal foundation that allows us to be lazy. I mean, I can go on my phone and order Uber Eats from somewhere 20 miles away and it'll be here in like 50 minutes to an hour. So I think it's just catering to our inherent laziness as a species.
Yeah, and I think part of that laziness has also led us to stay indoors much, much longer, right? We don't walk as much. We don't go outside as much. I mean, I find myself oftentimes at fault unless I catch myself and actually put it in my calendar that, you know, you could easily sit indoors 8 hours and just knock it out, and then you don't even realize you haven't stood up in so long. How do you start to work with people to reestablish that connection to nature, that getting outside in the sunlight, when most of us live within the confines of a 9-to-5 office job?
I mean, at the most basic level, I just like to make them aware of the fact that a lot of their health problems stem from the fact that they are stuck inside. I think the latest stat that I came across was that most people, I think in the United States, it might even be worldwide, but most people spend like 93% of their time indoors. So when you consider that we are a species that evolved to be outside, but we're only spending 7% of our time outside nowadays, I mean, from my perspective, it makes complete sense why we're dealing with so much dysfunction from the perspective of chronic disease. So just getting that light bulb to flip on, so to speak, does a lot of the work. And then from that point, it's really just making sure that we do some very basic things around the routine in order to get people outside more, so that then they have a real direct experience of what it's like to gain a lot of these health benefits associated with circadian biology. So it's, on one hand, it's the awareness. On the other hand, it's you have to have some skin in the game to understand the power of this work.
Yeah. And I think by just the experience alone, listen, I think there's a person out there that would say, I went on vacation, I was outdoors more, and I came back feeling worse, right? It doesn't happen. You feel better, you feel relaxed, you feel, and a lot of that has to do not just with the break in the routine and constantly striving to do more within your day at the confines of a computer. It's literally the biochemical reactions that are happening while you're outside in the sun. And I want to go into that more, because I don't think people truly appreciate how much life comes from the sun. I mean, you may understand when you look outside, you're a plant, and people will make that argument, well, I'm not a plant. You know, I don't need photosynthesis and all this. But I mean, going from vitamin D down, can you just kind of tap into what are those benefits of sunlight exposure that so many are missing?
I mean, the benefits are extensive. It touches absolutely everything, especially when you study circadian mechanisms, the fact that we are circadian creatures. Every aspect of our body is designed to get natural light and work with the full light spectrum from the sun. So you can talk about the leptin melanocortin pathway. You can talk about the pro-opioid melanocortin gene within every human being. You could talk about the fact that our cells actually emit extremely low frequency VUV light. That was proven by Fritz Popp, a biophysicist back in the day. You could talk about chromophores, how basically we are a solar panel for the sun. And people don't perceive it from that perspective because they look at a plant and they think about photosynthesis as a totally different thing. But I'm here to show people that really human photometabolism is extremely powerful. And there's a lot more evidence on the side favoring its existence as opposed to not. But in terms of benefits, I mean, sleep, energy, digestion, mood, everything, absolutely everything is tied to the circadian mechanism.
Let's talk a little bit about Fritz Popp, because he's come up in different discussions, different lectures I've seen that are trying to define a new paradigm to medicine and to healing. And his name comes up with others like Lakovsky and other great minds of the time. But can you go into, for those that don't know Fritz Popp and kind of the emittance of light within cells, what his discoveries were and why they're important?
Well, believe it or not, I was actually going to get into Fritz Popp as a form of study shortly before this, but I never really got into it too deep. I know that it's proven without a shadow of a doubt that he came to a biophysics perspective that, you know, the human body does emit light. I mean, every cell, when it goes through its reactions, emits a very low frequency type of UV light. And so when we think about the implications of that from a thermodynamic perspective, from a biophysics perspective, then this centralized idea that the sun is inherently bad for your skin or for human health makes no sense. And so like the deeper level of what I like to tackle is really the centralized notions around sunlight, around tanning, melanin. There are certain things that I find very damaging to people's health, at least with the messaging out there. And I think a large part of my work is really just dispelling a lot of those myths. But I mean, when you go into the late 1800s, early 1900s, you'll find these certain figures like Fritz Popp, like Albert St. Georgi, a lot of these key figures that have done some incredible science that has been pushed to the side because of certain narratives and certain incentive structures.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of the people I've heard speak, including my father, who brings up a lot of these names and even, you know, Einstein's contribution in quantum physics and so many there that have done so much over 100 years ago now, right? But it seems that even Newtonian principles weren't really applied to health and medicine until the 1900s or so, even 1800. It took a few hundred years for us to kind of get there and start to apply it. So I'm hoping things speed up and we don't have to wait another like 200 or so years before we realize we are energy, we are light, vibrate. All of this is at our core who we are. And if we don't apply that to medicine, we're missing such a big part of everything. And so I think it's vital to understand that, but understand that maybe in its own experience that we have as humans and again, connecting with nature, which again, utilizes light for so much of life. You mentioned tanning. This is always like a controversial thing because I always like to sport a tan and people like, welcome to sun cancer, man. You're going to get it someday. Like you're going to look old soon. I've heard it all and I kind of chuckle a little bit and I feel really healthy after I'm in the sun and feel energized and great after it. I don't burn, even though I'm fair skinned, you could say, coming from a Slavic Polish background. Tell me about what is it that people get wrong about tanning and why is it actually beneficial to you know, be out in the sun and tan?
You know, what I'd say most people get wrong, especially centralized medicine, the very quote-unquote authorities that are supposed to tell us the truth around this stuff, is that they view tanning from the perspective of inherent damage that the sun causes on the skin. What they miss, and this is a very important factor, what they miss is that the hormetic principle, hormesis, is the very foundation of this process of tanning, which in other words is just melanin production from UVA and UVB hitting the skin. And so if you think about exercise, we all love exercise. We all know the power of exercise. And most people will admit that you are actively damaging your tendons, muscles, and ligaments in the short term, acutely, in order to sleep, recover, and then come back stronger. So what I'm proposing is that the same process occurs with tanning. And I find it really, really damaging for board certified dermatologists, a lot of these people who are big in the space, quote unquote, leading authorities, to say that there is no such thing as a safe tan. That is a quote from the Skin Cancer Foundation in the United States. And when you go a level deeper, what are the benefits of a tan? I mean, obviously you have vitamin D3, a powerful, powerful immunomodulator and responsible for basically so many other things in the body. But if you study melanin, you'll find an incredible array of health benefits, including its radioprotective properties, it's protective against radiation. Melanin blocks 99% of all UV, so it's Mother Nature's original sunscreen. You have it being an antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, anti-venom in some cases. Some argument around using the photoelectric effect to then create free electrons in the body, which has an anti-inflammatory effect as well. So as you can see, there's a whole host of benefits that the mainstream is not touching at all. And that's because they don't have that perspective of electromagnetism, of, you know, of us being solar beings.
Right. Now, there is a counter case and a devil's advocate side to this, that there are a number of people with, you know, genetic proclivities, you could say, that do not tan well. Very fair skin, go out and just turn red right away, turn into a lobster. What would you say about people that do have that reaction to the sun and those kind of very fair skin people that would say, hey, Zay, like, I hear what you're saying because you are you, but I am me and I know me and the sun do not mesh well.
Yeah. Well, it comes down to lifestyle. If you take a look at how our environment is in modern society, the light and dark cycle are completely inverted. As a matter of fact, we don't even have a dark part of the light and dark cycle because everything has been lit.
Yep.
And so when we consider evolutionary biology, when we consider the human animal, we need to understand that all mammals can develop more melanin. Even the lightest skinned people out there can develop more melanin, assuming you have the proper framework around light. So this is where we get into the concept of a solar callus, which is extremely controversial from the leading experts, so to speak. And really, the solar callus is this idea that you use progressive overload in the same way that you would in the gym in order to break your skin in, so to speak, and develop stronger skin barrier. And if you study, like, here's one incredible fact for people, especially the lighter skin types. When it comes to morning sunlight exposure, the red and near infrared light and the red light spectrum actually primes and protects your skin for higher UVA and UVB conditions in the midday. And this is because that red light spectrum stimulates filaggrin production. It's a skin protein. It stimulates uricanic acid. So from a biological perspective, we evolved to get morning sunlight on most of our skin before we went into the midday.
Super interesting, because again, you just have to look back a little bit and understand the history of humans as a species to understand that we used to spend so much time, regardless of our race and culture and what our background and genetics are, outside, and that would be in the sun. And so most of the time, we also dictated our waking working hours by sunrise and sunset. And like you said, that all changed with the advent of the light bulb, which I've spoken to people, and people like T.S. Wiley have researched as the ultimate endocrine disruptor, she called it as. And I agree that that totally screwed us up. Like, as soon as we got the light bulb, yeah, convenience, amazing. Circadian rhythm, ruined. And hormones, pretty much ruined. But I guess I want to get into, like, what is that importance of rising with the sun, being outside during a sunrise, and also watching a sunset? Because we see it, again, it's such a luxury, right? It's like you hear, like, oh, I got to watch the sunset today, like, yay, and everyone's posting about. But again, I feel like if we really want to be healthy, we have to go back to that, where we the common thing is to watch a sunrise and watch a sunset. But talk about the health implications of that, of living on that type of prism where we are getting up at sunrise and starting to wind down, watching the sunset.
Mm. Yeah, so beginning at sunrise, I think sunrise is by far the most important part of this whole circadian discussion, because that's really that's where all the process from a biological perspective begins. So when you rise with the sun and you actively watch it on the horizon, you're stimulating aromatic amino acid production. So tryptophan, phenylalanine, these sort of aromatic amino acids are actually made of benzene rings, which are photon traps. So they are designed to take in natural light from that sunrise to then create certain byproducts such as melatonin, melanin, dopamine, adrenaline, noradrenaline. Essentially, sunrise is the starting point of all of your neurotransmitter and hormonal production processes. Like without that, you are setting yourself up for a real problem, especially if you're around artificial light that, in my belief, is inherently toxic to human biology. So then, you know, you go from sunrise, morning light. Again, I told you about the skin protection that you get from the red light spectrum there. Head into midday. Midday has a lot of other beneficial properties as well. UVA, UVB. UVA stimulates nitric oxide in the skin, which is a vasodilator. It opens up and relaxes those blood vessels. UVB is responsible for vitamin D3 production. So without UVB, you don't produce vitamin D3. There are other hosts and other benefits involved. And then heading into sunrise, of course, you have more of a wind down routine. So you get a lot of the same benefits from sunrise, but it's more in preparation for darkness, which is very important as well. So a lot of people focus on the light part of the discussion, but the darkness part of the discussion is just as important because this is a coupled mechanism from Mother Nature. So there's a lot to it, but it's a perfect symphony.
Yeah, and I was going to say, this is the law of polarity playing out, right? If you want to improve on sleep, look at the light. Look at what you're doing to expose yourself to light during the day that will then get your circadian and biorhythms back in check where you're actually producing melatonin at the proper time. But then, of course, you have to look at what are you doing before sleep? Are you around artificial light? Are you doing all these things? What does your sleep routine look like? How do you start prepping for sleep, which again is prepping you for the next day and feeling good and having energy throughout the day?
Mm. So I don't watch sunset all the time, but as many times as I can, I go and watch sunset to really set myself up for the darkness part. And then after the sun fully sets, my blue light blockers that are dark lensed go on. I don't take them off until I hit the sack. And then from there, I make sure to turn on all of the circadian friendly lights in my environment. So I'll put on the fireplace. I'll turn on the red spectrum bulbs that are low EMF, no flicker. I will actively put filters on all of my tech. So the laptops, the computers, the phones, all are fully red. And then from there, really, I just allow my natural endogenous melatonin to build up. And then, you know, I stop eating around 7:30 p.m. at the latest. And then I go to bed with anywhere from like 9 to 10 p.m. And from there, I'm pretty solid in terms of my sleep quality because I have everything in place from the circadian perspective to take advantage of the nighttime, which is extremely important.
I mean, sleep hygiene, pillow condition, whatever you want to call it, right, is so important. And people just flake over that. I mean, I still know a lot of people that cannot go to sleep without the TV on, right? And just that distraction like calms their mind, they say. But it's just terrible sleep quality due to that. And, you know, that's something I struggled with a little bit during college years. It's like you're staying up late, you're partying, I needed something on. But it took a while to break free of that. And it took understanding getting into that routine. My bed is my sanctuary. It's dark in there. I see that as sleep, not as a place to entertain myself or work. So that was a big part of it. You mentioned there's something interesting in getting the fireplace going, right? And a lot of people like, what the hell? Like, are you setting a mood here or something? Like, why the fireplace? And I'm fascinated, of course, by this inherent thing we have when you go outside or you just light a fire, you almost bring out the ancestral being in you. That was our entertainment where we told stories around for millennia. But can you go into why you are using fire within your realm? You know, you could even say candles could do this as well, but why is that priming you during your sleeping hours or when you're getting ready to sleep?
Well, I just think from the evolutionary perspective, it's the most circadian friendly light that we can use. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can dive into the biological mechanisms, but if I were to tell the average person who doesn't really care about that stuff, what is your experience after you go camping and you actively sit in front of a bonfire? You usually get the best sleep of your life. You wake up feeling refreshed. Within 10 minutes, your eyes are tired and ready for bed after being in front of that thing. So I think there's an intuitive understanding that firelight is very circadian friendly. There's discussion that it could suppress melatonin to some degree. Now, you know, I think that's being neurotic. I think what we really need to focus on is the artificial light completely destroying melatonin production and instead go for the more circadian friendly type of lighting situations.
What's your lighting situation like outside of, you know, the sleep routine where you're doing the fire and everything like that? Do you use a certain bulb or do you recommend certain lights that you're putting throughout your home?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of options out there. You have full spectrum bulbs that have a little bit of blue, but nothing compared to the conventional LEDs out there. For the nighttime ones, you have the bulbs that are purely within the red light spectrum. You can get amber bulbs. Incandescents are harder to find because of the ban in the United States. But in general, I think that there are a lot of options out there. I mean, you could talk about Bond Charge, Midwest Red Light Therapy, Huga. I mean, there are plenty of companies that are smaller that really focus on a lot of these great technological replacements.
Yeah, the full spectrum lighting is absolutely an upgrade if you're going to have lights around you like during the day and can't just get outside all the time. I think that's a big one to look into. I know we at our center looked at Sora and have Sora lights throughout that are more full spectrum and kind of, you know, trying to mimic as much of nature instead of just the blue that is constantly hitting you, spiking cortisol, which we already know is, you know, out of control with our stressful lives. Another thing that I feel like people miss when you talk about, let's say, sun, the relationship with it, tanning or burning, is diet. Is what is that doing in relation? Because people don't see the two together. And you're seeing people just say, hey, I burn no matter what. And your toxic burden, of course, I'd love to hit on. But what kind of a diet are you practicing or do you recommend for people that are having issues with being in the sun?
You know, I like to follow more of an animal-based type of approach. So the foundation for my philosophy on nutrition is, as the foundation, do you have whole nutrient-dense foods as the majority of your diet? I think that's the most basic form of understanding around nutrition. When it comes to nutrition and sunlight, I actually believe that light is a more powerful factor when it comes to avoiding burns. But at the same time, I do think that nutrition is important to a degree. We have to consider the consumption of vegetable oil, you know, these rancid omega-6s that really make up the integrity of the skin. If you're consuming a lot of that, which most Americans are, then their skin is automatically going to be more vulnerable. Whereas I like a lot of the monounsaturated, saturated fat sources that are extremely powerful for overall skin health. You have the consumption of wild-caught marine life, which I'm a huge fan of. You talk about omega-3s making up the integrity of the skin. And it's also important to consider the skin in relation as one unit to the brain and the eyes. So this is what we call neuroectoderm, which refers to all of these things being made up of the same skin when you're an embryo in your mother's womb. And so we have to consider whatever impacts the skin in a negative way will definitely impact the eyes and the brain in the same way negatively. So it's all one unit. And I think if we can really have a more comprehensive approach to not only our light diet, but our real diet, then we can set ourselves up to better handle sunlight exposure.
Absolutely. And I think one of those things that you could combine the two is eating nutritious. And I know you like to eat outdoors. What are the benefits there? Because I've made this case that, you know, we should be eating outside if we can more so. What are the benefits of actually eating your food outdoors?
Well, I mean, there was a recent study that I covered. I think it was 2022 or 2023, but basically they showed that if you get deep red light for 15 minutes on your skin directly after a meal, your postprandial blood glucose goes down substantially. I think it was by like 35, 39%, something of that nature. So when you consider that the United States has a huge epidemic of type 2 diabetics, even worse pre-diabetics that goes unknown and unnoticed, this has massive implications for people. I mean, just go outside, get a lot of your skin exposed and eat your meals outdoors.
Yeah. And there's the other part to that too. If you're eating poorly, you're going to have a high toxic burden. And I found this to be true even in myself when I was just not taking care of myself and eating a little, you know, worse years and years ago, probably in my 20s, that I would burn easier. And I think a big portion of that, as I've learned from other doctors and people, is that when your organs of elimination are burdened and can't keep up and eliminate those toxins, they turn to the skin as the next elimination route. Sweat, other things. If you're not sweating, that's not a great thing because you can't eliminate that. But when you go out in the sun, it basically kind of triggers that. So you have toxins trying to come through the skin, then you have sun basically, you know, stimulating the skin. And so you may have a redness reaction or some kind of hive reaction to it. You know, what are your thoughts on that of the sun almost being a barometer of toxicity within the body?
I think it plays a role. I mean, that makes sense from a mechanistic standpoint. We have to consider that sunlight is a stressor on the body, but again, using that hormetic framework, it's a stressor that drives all of life and evolution to a certain direction of growth and development. But yeah, I think, like I said, I think the toxicity plays a role in the skin. I think nutrition plays a role in the skin, but people do not appreciate and do not cover the fact that that red light spectrum in the morning actually primes the skin in order for you to take advantage of the UVA and UVB midday. And what I notice is that the vast majority of people don't get most of their skin exposed in the morning, and then they immediately head into midday sunbathing conditions. And then, I mean, we can get into this as well. They use sunglasses, sunscreen, contact lenses. And then when you couple that with the fact that they're also exposed to artificial light, which damages the skin after sunset, you have a recipe for burns, especially for lighter skin people.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you brought these things up because I want to hit on each and every one of them. Let's start with that, because I've had people ask me this, and I kind of, you know, I want to be an ideal, like give them the best advice. I wear contacts myself. What are your thoughts on first thing in the morning, getting light without the contacts in and then putting them in versus, you know, getting that sun exposure with contacts in?
Yeah. I mean, personally, I am not an advocate of contacts in any scenario at all. I am more on the extreme end of that, knowing the perspective of light at the quantum level and how it impacts biology. I would much prefer to have somebody transition from contact lenses to reading glasses. I know it's not cool. It's not sexy. It's not well, it's not as convenient for people, but I think from a biological perspective, it is crucial that you get the full light spectrum into the eye from a peripheral standpoint, because that is really what stimulates the process of eye regeneration, if you want to dive into that. When it comes to contact lenses, you have corneal hypoxia, which is a huge problem. So essentially, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul for your vision. You're seeing in the short term, but in the long term, you're destroying your vision. And then, you know, I think with all of these things, I think it comes down to the fact that any filter or lens artificially manipulates the full light spectrum in harmful ways.
Oh, I agree with you. You know, I'm probably not on the level of purists because I do wear contacts, so I can't, you know, go too much. But no, but I'm a big believer that I want them out as soon as possible, you know, and I want them left out as much as possible in the morning as well. And then I'll transition for shorter periods, take them out. But I can't imagine. I mean, I've done that before where you leave them in, you just feel like your eyes are in completely not sad, you know, not getting oxygen, not getting the light. It really does feel like that. And they start to wither away. And I do think that's a big problem as people, as you heard, even in this opening, like you're staring at screens the whole time. You're not outside. You're already damaging the hell out of them.
And people, sorry to interrupt, but people don't understand. Please. Within the eye, there are an incredible amount of mitochondria. There's melanin in the eye. There are non-visual photoreceptors that are responsive directly with light. So light is actually the most powerful input when it comes to all of these biological mechanisms. And if you don't respect the light in your environment and you don't allow the full light spectrum to get in, there's going to be some serious consequences down the road.
And the next part of that is sunglasses. Again, super cool. You know, Corey Hart, wear your sunglasses at night. But there's a big problem to wearing sunglasses a lot, right? Can you go into that? Because I've touched on it and people, again, are just like, well, then I'd be blind from the sun. But there is an actual health risk or, you know, detrimental effect to wearing sunglasses.
Yeah. So common misconception. I hear it all the time. I have sensitive eyes. I can't go outside without the sunglasses. But when you start to view it from the perspective of it's almost like a cast for your eyes, if you never expose your eyes to natural sunlight, then you're obviously going to become more sensitive because when you're outside, the magnitude of the light is very high in general, even on a cloudy day. So not only do you have the cast perspective, you're not getting your eyes in the game, so to speak. When we're talking about the biological mechanisms behind why you don't want to wear sunglasses, it's because it leaves you more susceptible to burns, especially if you're sunbathing and using sunglasses. And the reason why is because sunlight gets into the eye, it activates, it hits the POMC gene, proopio melanocortin, which I mentioned earlier. And POMC leaves off biological peptides. There are quite a few of them, but one of them is alpha melanocyte stimulating hormone. So alpha MSH, what do the melanocytes do? They stimulate melanin production in the skin as a response to sunlight. So if you block that, that signal to produce melanin, you're essentially leaving yourself open to getting burned. It's almost a recipe asking for burns.
Yeah, it's counterproductive to what we think, right? It's again, so many people are in this backward state. And part of that backward state brings me to my next point of sunscreen. I'm pretty sure, I would hope everyone listening to this understands that, you know, chemically based benzene, avobenzene, all of these sunscreens are not good, especially the spray ones and using propellants, and they're really just terrible. But then you have mineral based sunscreens. What are your thoughts on that type of sunscreen? Let's take out the carcinogenic, because we know that already, and not even keep that in discussion. What are your thoughts on mineral based sunscreens?
You know, if the mineral-based sunscreens are designed to block UVA and UVB, which we know have health benefits, then I think it's kind of, there's an issue with the way the person is thinking about sunlight exposure. And there's an issue with their approach. Your biology, whether you're light skin, dark skin, your biology has everything set up in order for you to avoid sunburn, because that's just the evolutionary reality here. So what I want people to understand is that even with a mineral-based sunscreen, you are artificially manipulating the full light spectrum. You're blocking UVA and UVB. There is potential concern with sunscreen that it purely concentrates blue light wavelengths onto the skin, which we know is inherently damaging on its own. I mean, that's just artificial light. And then, you know, you're preventing yourself from producing melanin, which is a huge problem, considering all the benefits that I mentioned earlier, considering that UVA and UVB are needed to produce melanin, which has all these systemic effects. I mean, you can find melanin throughout all of our bodies. Here's a fun fact for people. Without melanin, you couldn't sense anything, because between every sense organ and your brain is melanin. That's one of its properties. So I want people to understand and grasp how deep this goes from a biological perspective.
Right. And I could totally appreciate that, because again, you have to look back on where we were with our connection in nature. There was no such thing as sunscreen. You could use natural. So let's say this, what about natural things like sunflower, coconut oil, things like that, that have their natural SPF of 4 or so, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff can definitely help. I am a big believer that you should understand how to sunbathe properly and build your solar callus. And then from that point, you have to utilize things like clothing and shade. Yeah. I think clothing and shade are like timeless. Thus, if you want to avoid a sunburn, you've had enough sun, go ahead, pop yourself in the shade, or just put some clothes on, you know?
I was going to say, that's the one thing people just always do not bring up in this discussion, is it's either, well, you're going to be out in the sun for 12 hours straight. You know, how do you do that without sunscreen? It's like, there are things like clothing and shade that we've used for centuries as well. I mean, I've been out in the desert. I've hiked through the Jordan Desert before. And no, when you come upon a little tree that gives you shade, you're going to sit there for a while and just take it in. And it's beautiful. It just cools you down. It's shade is a wonderful, wonderful thing when you talk about these things of being out in the sun and kind of being able to limit yourself in some ways. But people always seem to think that it's not part of the equation when you talk about the sun.
Yeah. And you get benefit by being in the shade as well. I mean, you get an incredible amount of near infrared light. If you can see the tree above me, that green is reflected for a lot of the red light spectrum. So that near infrared light gets into your system and it produces a whole host of beneficial processes.
Let's talk about infrared light. Let's talk about things a little outside of sunlight alone, but also in the realm of things that people expose themselves to. I mean, there's a big push for infrared saunas. Are you a fan of infrared saunas? I know I've seen you talk about steam rooms and the traditional saunas. Can you talk about what's your preference out of those types of options?
I would say, I mean, a lot of the research that has developed over the past 30, 40, however many decades is focused on dry saunas. I'm a big fan of infrared saunas. I mean, you have people who are worried about the non-native EMF from the sauna. I don't think it's too much of a big deal if you control for other factors as well in your lifestyle. But infrared, I'm a huge fan of. I think going back to the idea that people spend 93% of their time indoors, we are starved as a species for infrared light, near infrared light, far infrared, the whole spectrum. And so the more of it we can get, the better our mitochondrial health, which I believe is the foundation of all chronic disease, the better just overall mood is, you know, everything will flow as a result of getting more infrared light.
And I think you could also say, because I'm sure a lot of people that listen to this are not in Southern California like you are. And, you know, in a place like New York, where it's raining right now and it's kind of miserable, that just don't have the ability to be outdoors or even see it or in cold conditions on a higher latitude. So beyond the infrared sauna, what would be your recommendation for people that just are not able to get that much sunlight because of where they live?
I would say dimming any sources of artificial light indoors. I would say opening windows, especially in the morning, you know, getting the, because you generally have, you still have more of a full light spectrum, even if it's really cloudy. I mean, if it's raining and you go outside, it's still pretty bright out. And I think people intuitively understand that. So you're still getting a lot of benefit on that end. I would say utilizing cold thermogenesis is extremely powerful. That's something I've been diving into lately from an experiential perspective. Ice baths have been phenomenal for me. And also considering this, you know, when you think about darkness and winter and higher latitude, if you are evolutionarily adapted to that sort of environment, there are systems in place for you to gain a lot of benefits. So you have melatonin that's fundamentally tied to the vitamin D receptor. So if you have more darkness, you stimulate melatonin that's able to tap into the vitamin D receptor, which liberates vitamin D3 from your stored amounts in there. And then I think, you know, just making sure to go with the seasons is important. If you are cyclical and seasonal creatures, so, you know, spring, summer, winter, just go through the whole process and do different things depending on the time of season.
You bring up the I know, cold plunging and cold immersion. A lot of people that are maybe listening and even patients that we have here at our medical center, you know, are dealing with a lot of different things, right? They're not in a health optimized state yet. Do you find that those types of people should stay away from the sun as well as the cold because it's too much of a stressor on their immune systems? Or is that something that you can still expose yourself to?
I'd say there's more nuance around the cold, especially if you're talking about getting into an ice bath. I think there's a, you know, it just depends on the individual use case. With the sun, I think everybody should be out in the sun, assuming that they have a proper framework. And, you know, if I were to say one thing on the sunlight end, it would be to get more of that morning sunlight on most of your skin. No contacts, no sunglasses. That is going to set the stage for all these other things. And then when you do decide to sunbathe during the midday, you're actually resilient. You have a solar callus to then lean on to gain all of the benefits of melanin, vitamin D3, so forth.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like the major thesis is like get outside in the morning, get that sunlight in the morning. Even if you can't get outside, like just in the window, right? Just through, open the window and get that on your eyeballs, correct?
Yeah. Open the windows. That is such an important point because again, the same concept as sunglasses, contacts, sunscreen, windows, conventional glass artificially manipulates the full light spectrum. I think it blocks all of the UVB. It leaves UVA untouched. It leaves blue light untouched and it blocks 30 to 60% of the red light spectrum. So you basically have, when you get sunlight through a glass window, you're basically getting a double dose of UVA and blue light in a window, which is the most damaging combination.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's such a shame that we live most of our time indoors and the only sunlight we're getting is through glass, right? And giving us that double. So we're indoors. We already got these like shitty lights coming on us. We got the EMFs going. We're probably in a place, if it's more modernized, like an office, many of them are sealed up, meaning the VOCs, all the kind of different types of toxins that are in all the building material are sitting there. You're in air conditioned, usually kind of, you know, term no fresh air. All of those are just a recipe for disease, right?
And we wonder why chronic disease rates are surging. Everything from autoimmune disease to cancer to heart disease, like every single thing that we are seeing, I think is a direct result of that environment because we are an organism that evolved in a very specific and tightly organized environment. By Mother Nature, we were designed to be outside most of the time. We were designed to sense natural EMF, not non-native EMF.
Yeah.
And so all of these things, you know, really just, they do a number on the human species and it's unfortunate, man.
It's really unfortunate. And it's even more unfortunate that we had a pandemic that was a lockdown, right? And people were scared of going outside and, you know, mad, no fresh air. Like it's all been this downward spiral. And of course, you can understand if you look at it from that prism, why most of us are sick or at least dealing with some health issues, trying to normalize it, right? Whether it's like just poor energy, poor sleep, trying to say that's just part of aging when it's completely not. and we're just transforming, our understanding of even what health is, and kind of giving us excuses to be unhealthy, that it's just part of aging. You're going to have a chronic disease, and here's a pill. Here's another pill when you get worse and worse. And it's really sad. And I do think listening to people such as yourself and just building awareness around it is the answer to at least start to reverse all of this. Now, yeah. Part of what you do, of course, is helping others beyond just the information, everything. And you have something called the 80-20 health system. Can you go into that? Because I'm familiar with Pareto and that principle, and that's how I approach most of my business and my schedule with that. But go into how 80-20 health system works.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously you just mentioned that you're familiar with Pareto, but for those who aren't, there's this concept that, 80% of the results come from 20% of the effort. And Pareto was he an economist? What was he?
I believe so. Yeah.
He basically found that this distribution is almost like a natural law. It's found in all sorts of different things, whether it's businesses, plants, growth, things of that nature. And so I really like to take that lens of efficiency and being more focused on timeless principles to maximize results in the least amount of time with ideally the least amount of effort. You can call it almost like a strategic form of laziness, but we're really focused on the essence of great health. And so my framework is like circadian biology, light environment, hydration, nutrition, supplementation, detoxification, blood work, gene analysis. All of this stuff goes into one system. And within each of those fundamentals, there are certain pillars that hold that fundamental together. And so that's really what I like to utilize, the 80-20 principle, from the perspective of my coaching. And so far, I found it to be incredible. I mean, I've taken people from, some really dire situations to at least having some control over their health and life. And to me, that's the most gratifying thing in the world.
Oh, absolutely. And I always tell this to people. It's like, if you want to start, you got to start by prioritizing your health and making it something, your why, in a sense, because otherwise you just won't care to do anything about it. But then you have to look at, what's kind of holding you back in some ways, if you already have this why, this want to take control of your health. A lot of times that boils down to something like, I don't have the time, but we all have 24 hours. I think what really people are saying when they don't have the time, it's either not a priority or you're missing two things. And to me, it's between vitality and efficiency. And if you have both of those, you can really, accomplish so much more. We all have the 24 hours in a day. It doesn't separate us that much. It's what we do with that. And a lot of times I've realized, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, is, are you being efficient with your time? If you're jumping around multitasking, as so many like to do, from an email to this to that, that's not efficient at all. That is being inefficient with your time. You're slowing things down, and suddenly 1 hour becomes 3 hours of work. And the other thing is your vitality. If you don't have the energy throughout the day, the ability to actually do things in an efficient manner, then you will also slow yourself down. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Because that's just a thesis of mine, because I've always you hear time is our most valuable. We all have that same amount to us all. That time is relative in some ways, but a minute is a minute. And we all live within 24-hour confines. But, vitality and efficiency, do you abide by that? What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I completely agree. I think the one area where, and this would probably go against what most people believe, I don't think time is the most important resource from the human experience. I think energy actually is. Without the energy to do something with your life, what use is time? You can have all the time in the world. If you don't have any energy to take advantage and pounce on opportunities, it's useless. And so this is why I'm like, it also goes back to mitochondrial function, because mitochondria produce your energy. So I think time and energy is extremely important. I actually place vitality above health, interesting enough, because I think there is some sort of feedback from the mind, the psyche, the spirit, to which you can do something that's objectively unhealthy to other people, but it's not having that effect on you because you have so much vitality and you're driven by a purpose. And you're able to withstand more stress than a lot of other people who don't have that purpose. So, a few things that come to mind, but I completely agree with the sentiment.
Yeah, and when I hear you talk about that energy, right, and that purpose versus mitochondria, to me, that's like the physical versus the spiritual. The physical is your mitochondria. You have to keep those really charged, and that's literally ATP production energy, the definition on a biochemical status within the body. But so many people then don't understand that there's a flip side to that vitality that comes from your purpose, your why, that drive, that passion in you. I feel like a lot of people, that's where they're missing, you know, the equation. I see a lot of biohackers out there that are doing everything to stimulate their mitochondria. They are methyl in blue meets red light therapy, meets NAD, all of it, right? Meets cold plunging, but they are missing their why. And that's what's holding them back from being healthy in a sense, being happy and having true vitality, because it's a combination of both. Do you work with like people to try and figure out that purpose, that why?
You know, not specifically. I would say I am more focused on the health end, but I do find that when a gentleman joins my coaching program, it's almost like I view them as family when they onboard with me. And I'm very helpful. I go to the end of the world for them to make sure they get the best results. But I almost find that it's the accountability is almost therapeutic that the individual gets as a result of having somebody who's been through it with a lot of other people, who has the expert opinion, who studies a lot obsessively. So, you know, I really like that aspect of it. And I think that's something people don't touch on. But in terms of laying the foundation for their health, I think that's what really allows a lot of gentlemen, from my experience, to then have more clarity around the purpose, because it is the foundation, in my opinion. Without health, I mean, you don't have anything. So it's really huge for me.
Absolutely. Is there anything you're excited about on the horizon that's like kind of, you know, getting you riled up for the future of health, of humanity?
A lot of people have some very negative outlooks on
That's why I'm trying to stay positive. Yeah.
You know, I'm very excited about the circadian biology piece. There's a reason why I'm so focused on it. I mean, I've focused on spring water. I've focused on nutrition, supplementation, other things like that. But I really find myself gravitating towards the light component, the electromagnetism component, because people just don't understand anything around this stuff in general. I mean, and even like a lot of the mainstream authorities are telling you to do the opposite of a lot of these timeless principles. And so I do see myself as an educator around that, those lines. I do work with a local diagnostic company called DexFit OC in Irvine here in Orange County that is working with athletes, working with just everyday people to try to bring these sort of principles to their everyday lives.
Is it that you find like most athletes are the ones that get the results with you, or are you working with all sorts of men wherever they may be?
I honestly feel like the athletes are tougher to crack.
Oh, yeah?
Everyday people, because again, they're like, I had a friend who mentioned that the athletes almost take like a chimpanzee approach to health and performance. Like they're trying to brute force their way through everything. And I don't think that works, especially at the higher end of performance. And you also have some very extreme personalities on that end. So I find that everyday people are generally more open to a lot of these things because they just want to have a healthier life, be around for their kids. But either way, you know, athletes, everyday people, both of them get tremendous help from having this framework.
Yeah. Is there anything that you can't live without on a daily basis? Not sunlight. Don't answer. That's a cop out.
I was about to answer with that one.
I know. That, and don't say spring water either, please. No, just like I always like this, just to tap into guests and everything on the one thing they can't live without. That's going to be surprising, but maybe it's not that surprising. But is there anything that you can't live without on a daily basis that you attribute to your health and happiness?
You know, I would honestly say writing. I think writing has been
a
profound transformative experience for me. I mean, it's even helped me in my speaking skills, which is something I've always wanted to do, but I've been a writer for like, I mean, I started on Medium maybe like 5, 6, 7 years ago, started earning a little bit of money from that, gained an interest, but I like to view things from the perspective of mastery. So, you know, if I'm not interested in mastering it, I generally want nothing to do with it. And that's because I think that young experience of going from age 4 to like 26 with soccer and playing competitively, that's really informed a lot of my philosophy on this stuff. But writing has definitely allowed me to gain tremendous benefit out of my life. So I'm very grateful for it.
I love that, because I will say my answer would be, you know, I can't live without my planner / journal. Like, it follows me everywhere. I'm writing and I'm just putting, you know, pen to paper ideas and different things and planning and affirmations, all of that. And I found it incredibly therapeutic and so simple, right? It's just pen and paper, basically. So I'm a big fan of that.
Timeless. Another timeless.
It is. And I think it's still, you know, it triggers the brain in different ways than typing, let's say, on a computer in a digital sense, of course. And I do find that. And it's interesting. Like, I go to restaurants sometimes and I travel by myself and, you know, I'll start writing and they're like, oh, wow. Like, are you writing a book? Like, what are you doing with that? Just like, no, just playing out. Just like, I've never seen anyone. It's just such a strange thing that we've made things that, again, like being in sunlight, writing down things on a piece of paper with you. We made them abnormal. And I do believe that because we made them abnormal, we are now seeing the consequence of a sick society.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that translates itself into how people think, the level of intellectual firepower that people have at their disposal to be able to solve problems in society. I think, you know, it all meshes together into one thing and everything informs everything else. It's all interconnected.
Yeah. Zaid, you know, looking ahead, what are your kind of goals and aspirations for advancing men's health awareness and empowerment through your coaching?
Ooh, what a question. I want to fight chronic disease head on. I definitely want to do that. And I think, you know, I don't necessarily need to do that by focusing so much on chronic disease, but focusing on the things that prevent chronic disease. So I'd like to have a more preventative strategy going into the future. I would definitely like to destroy a lot of the ideas, the poor ideas out there that are, you know, surrounding sunlight, melanin, tanning, anything within the health space that I find to go against nature and biology and just common sense and using it as evidence-based. Like that's, you know, I think that's a big thing for me. So really just continuing on with the work, speaking to more people such as yourself in the space, developing deeper relationships and just trying to make a dent in the world for good. As opposed to just ignorance and evil.
I love that, Zaid. And to paraphrase Mother Teresa, I believe she said something like, don't invite me to an anti-war protest. Invite me to a pro-peace event, right? And that's where I think we need to go, what you're saying there. I don't want to focus on the disease portion of it. I want to focus on the health. And I know that will eliminate the disease portion of it. And so thank you for your work. Where can people learn more about you and connect with you?
Yeah, my website, Zaid K. Dahaj, ZAIDKDAHHAJ. Same Instagram handle, same Twitter handle, same Substack as well. That's mainly where you can find me. And there's a lot of content for people to use. So read up and study.
There is. And I've been eating up and loving it. Thank you. Keep sharing your light with the world. And it was a pleasure connecting.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Be sure to visit his website, Zaid K. Dahaj. And for more information about Zaid's coaching program, check out 2AM Podcast as well. And until next time, continue writing your own healing story.